Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Hey. Welcome to a Friday. Weekend sneaking. Kind of a conniver, if you ask me. Not a very encouraging performance last night. Got off a little early. Grab a little dinner, head home, hunker down for Oregon-Arizona State. I don't play very well in the first half, fall behind by double digits again, make a big rally. Tie the game, force an ASU miss. They've got the ball, they're running their offense. Peyton Pritchard beats his guy off the dribble, drives in for a layup, and am I the only one who was like, dude, you're righty. Why are you shooting at lefty from the right side? And he missed the whole rim. It was just such a strange shot. And just kind of a microcosm of this team's offense in many cases on the road in conference this year. Then you had Duarte miss the front end of a 1-1, which we won't even talk about. Foul shooting. Not only for Oregon, but for Arizona State, you got to give them credit for going 11 of 21 from the stripe and being like, oh, it's not over yet. Trust me, Oregon still got a shot. Aside from Will Richardson, the rest of the Ducks went 6 of 12, which is not very good. And in big situations, they end up losing the game. And now it is even tighter. The weird thing is about this odd conference this year, if Oregon beats Arizona tomorrow, which, you know, at this point, I think during the lightning round, was it, or crunch exchange, I think Nick asked me the percentage chance I give Oregon of sweeping this series. What'd I say, 25%? So in essence, that means I knew they were going to lose one, and I'm giving them a 50-50 shot in the other, which is tomorrow against an Arizona team that took them to overtime here. So, yeah. The problem with this conference, which is, I guess, the reason for optimism about this conference, is take nothing for granted. None of these teams are exceptional. They've all got good qualities. They all have great moments. But overall, you're now looking at three teams with four losses, Oregon and UCLA with five, USC with a rough loss last night. They fall to 8-6 in the league. Colorado's in really, really good shape. I mean, obviously, they control their own destiny. They've won the Pac-12 tournament and the auto qualifier for the Big Dance, but they've never won a conference regular season title. As a matter of fact, with Colorado, probably going back to their Big 8, Big 12 days, I would not imagine that in the modern era that they won a league title either. But Tad Boyle has turned that from an also-ran program into one that, you know, makes at least semi-regular appearances in the Big Dance. On tap, we'll have a trio of candidates for our Crunch Time Tool Shed at the end of this hour. We'll have Jerry Thompson of Ducks Illustrated at the bottom of the 4 o'clock hour. The new mag is out. And ironically, without knowing, the theme of my article, Mallard Musings, was holding serve, which was the eye on football, men's basketball, women's basketball, not losing any games at home. And the cover has a picture of a Pritchard driving against UCLA and Sabrina scoring against ASU, that the men and women's basketball teams are the only unbeaten in conference at home. And you could also throw in the football team. So get that going for you, which is nice. For some reason, even though it was announced a couple days ago and the All-Star break resumed, the post-All-Star break action resumed last night, I heard a lot of reaction to John Beilein leaving the Cavaliers and just how weird that was, because he becomes just the third coach in the modern era to coach game one, his first time ever, and be out. He's gone. That's it. He must have just hung around till Valentine's Day, I guess, and be like, I didn't get candy, I didn't get roses, the chocolate was old, I'm out. Pros ain't cut out for me.
Isn't that just very typical of what you would imagine a Valentine's Day in Cleveland being like? Just, I was sad, the food wasn't good, and candy
tires
didn't
on fire
help me.
On the Cuyahoga
yeah, rivers
River.
Are on fire, and not in a romantic way. I don't understand what's going on out there. It just smells bad. I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to be here.
Well, especially when you consider, like I said, the season starts in October, so you go to November, you go to December, you go to January, you go to February. He lost more games in 4 months in the NBA than six full seasons at Michigan. That's got to be a record, easily. Six seasons? It also helped. Well, first of all, there's a natural tie-in. If he stunk at Michigan, he wasn't going to get an NBA job. So, you know, he turned Michigan into a team that kind of didn't think much about basketball-wise post-Fab Five to a program that ended up, you know, playing for national titles, regular on the national scene, a lot of deep trips into the big dance. But like I said, you lose 39 games over 6 years in college basketball. That's pretty good. I mean, he only missed the dance once over his last 9 years. I mean, you know, he played for the national title in 2013. And then also, you know, I always forget that they were also in it in 2018, when they got their babas handed to them by Villanova. So, yeah, there were some Elite Eights and Sweet 16s, but he made, I guess the most emphatic way to say it is he got them to the final two. I should have yelled two. And that year, the Kentucky team that beat them, if memory serves, that was Anthony Davis, right? No, that was the Julius Randle, Aaron Harrison, Andrew Harrison team.
Is there a city that you would actually be willing to go to that you make fun of more, like, or less than Cleveland? Because we make fun of Cleveland a lot about it just being a very sad, weird place, but it's not even like people in Cleveland are like, no, it's really great here, come visit, you'll like it better, you got to come out and see the city. Like, you rag on Boston sports all the time, but like, I'd imagine Boston, the city, kind of cool, maybe nice to go to and see.
It's an amazing city.
You hate on the 12s all the time. Seattle's very
Love
nice.
Seattle,
I've been there
the
a couple times as well. But like, Cleveland is the perfect combination of city with sports teams that I can make fun of forever, and I think it would be very last on my list of cities I would go to try and get my mind changed as to, is this really a place worth going to?
Well, for me, there's
changing
one thing
perception.
In Cleveland, being of my age and my musical taste, and that would be the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So that would be a big draw.
But isn't that tainted for some weird reason? I think they let like Journey or Guns N' Roses in or something. You're very
against it recently.
Oh,
there's been some very suspect additions to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And first of all, I'm just trying to think, you know, talking about people from Jersey is kind of cliche, and talking about the city of Cleveland is cliche. It always has been. It's always been, I mean, even Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop, when he broke into that station where Victor Maitland was storing his illegal drugs, where it had to come through and go for customs, and he faked like he was some kind of an enforcement dude, not a cop, for when a customs agent. He comes in, and I do this all the time. I tour these places, and aside from Cleveland, this is the worst facility in America. So that's always been the go-to knock. And then, till the 90s, but you have to understand, you had the Browns, and the Indians played at Municipal Stadium, which was just brutal. It was like the biggest stadium, 74,000 people, and it always looked empty because Cleveland stunk. And then they built Jacobs Field, and remember, they started to rise from the ashes, and they started to be a really good team, and the Jake was kind of a hot spot around the same time that they built the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, and I have some very sad news I would like to share. I Googled Cleveland Travel Board, and I found out their website is thisiscleveland.com, which is very inspiring. They have a video of their very interesting nightlife scene, which is a lot of people standing behind barriers and what looks like a large bonfire. So I guess they light things on fire even not on their rivers in Cleveland. But they have this little section that says, what's the best part of Cleveland? And David says that the best part of Cleveland is the sports scene, because Cleveland sports is all about family. It's what I grew up on. It's foundational to me. And I feel so sad for David right now. This feels like what he looks forward to. This poor guy, if he really thinks the best part of Cleveland is that one time LeBron came here and won us a title, if that's the best part of Cleveland, Cleveland's got a lot of bad things going for it, doesn't it?
If you Google Sam Weish, the late Sam Weish, Cleveland, Cincinnati, he is at an event, and they're throwing stuff on the on a basketball court. I don't know why. Maybe it's a college game, and he gets the microphone, and he's chastising the crowd, and his closing line is, "You don't live in Cleveland, you live in Cincinnati." And that was his way of condemning the crowd. So, yeah, Cleveland has been the brunt of jokes. What'd you find?
The quote is, "Will the next person that sees anybody throw anything onto this field, point them out and get them out of here. You don't live in Cleveland, you live in Cincinnati." That doesn't sound much better. I don't want to go to Cincinnati either.
Yeah, but first of all, at least with Cincinnati, you had the Big Red Machine. They won the World Series in 1990. They've made a couple of Super Bowls. I mean,
they haven't won a playoff game since 1990.
Oh, no.
They've been very bad.
The reason those people tried to get that bill passed for medicinal marijuana was because of the combo. But there's nothing worse than the Browns. There's nothing, you know, So the Cleveland Indians are now it, right, in Major League Baseball, 1948, of all the teams who haven't won it. Now that Houston cheated their way to a title and we broke the curse of the Cubbies and the White Sox and the Red Sox, then went back to the 19-teens, Washington, you know, broke through. In the National League, Atlanta in 95, Washington just now, Mets 86, Philly 08, Miami in 2003, Cardinals, Brewers have never won it, but they don't, you know, with a team, a franchise like Cleveland, they go back to the 1900, not to like the 1960s. So yeah, the Cubs, the Pirates are now getting to the point where 1979 has been a long time ago. Dodgers, we know about the drought. Arizona, obviously won in the 2000s. Your Giants have won three. Rockies have never won it. Padres, back to the 1960s. Mariners, 1970s.
See, San Diego is another very sad sports town, but it's a fantastic city that everybody should go to because it's beautiful and great. And everybody else is kind of like, how can a city that nice not have nice things happen to it? Because good
they
players
get enough with the weather.
That okay, fair enough, fair enough. But you think about Pittsburgh, I mean, just Pittsburgh baseball is very sad, but the Steelers and Penguins had been very good as well. So you're kind of set there.
Yeah, no, they make up for it. I guess the Rangers started as the Senators in 1961 are probably the second most miserable longest drought that we have right now. Because obviously the Yankees won recently, Boston, Toronto in the 90s, Baltimore, 83, Twins in the 90s, Cleveland never, White Sox in 05, Kansas City recently. Tigers, not since 84, but it's the 80s. The A's last won it in 89. The Angels are only 1-0-2. Yeah, so Cleveland right now is the MLB standard setter, and it goes back to 1948. So, yeah, it's Cleveland, even taking a backseat to freaking Cincinnati, which led people to try and get something passed. So just being fans of the Browns and Bengals could get you a medicinal marijuana card.
What would it take for you to go to Cleveland? What would it take? Would it, I mean, I'm imagining it would have to be in the summertime. There's nothing going on. The Yankees are in town. You get to
Yankees
see a ball
in town,
game.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, for sure. But there would also have to there'd have to be some kick-ass golf course I could play as well.
Ooh, are there any?
Stop it! It's a major city.
And imagine it'd be littered with trash. Just not littered everywhere, but just like the fairway is kind of brown and there's definitely trash that's in the bunkers and hey, kind of care about golf, but you know, it's just a city track. You got to get into a private course. You don't know anybody in Cleveland. It's got to be tough.
Somebody said another thing about Cleveland, which kind of rose to fame in the 90s as Jacobs Field. The Drew Carey Show took place in Cleveland. And they had the song Cleveland Rocks. So let me tell you something. If you're reaching for a fictional sitcom, I think that's pretty indicative of. Of course, Firestone is in Ohio. That's a legendary venue that has hosted majors. It used to be where they hosted the World Series of Golf. I mean, hell. Jack Nicklaus went to Ohio State, so.
That's Columbus, though, so you got a golf around.
Yeah, you
Columbus,
got Columbus, you got Cleveland, you got different. Cincinnati, you got Ohio. Somebody said there's Cedar Point Amusement Park. Is that real, or is that, like, where?
It looks like the best-rated golf course, according to Google, is one that is 4.4 stars, the Little Met Golf Course. That's all we got. So you have one. You don't even have a 5-star rated golf course in Cleveland.
I'm wondering
off one of the lakes out there. Is it Erie? I don't know which one. You're off the Great Lake. You got a kind of a river. Maybe it's not great for golf. I don't know.
My question would be: has Cleveland ever hosted a major golf event? I mean, obviously. You go through the Masters because that's one venue. Toledo, Ohio, Inverness, that's legendary. I don't know how close Toledo is to Cleveland. And you know what? The fact that you can't come up with a lot off the top of your head, Nick, I think that might be kind of,
I think it's kind
proving
of
our point.
Yeah.
You go back to Gene Sarazen winning the 1940 U.S. Open. See, sometimes you got to double check because it might be a suburb. For example, Medina is a legendary venue that has hosted major tournaments, but it's really Chicago.
Toledo is closer to Detroit, it looks like, than it is to Cleveland or the greater Cleveland area. I think it's on the other end of Lake Erie, kind of as it bends around the top of Ohio there. I'm trying to describe a map of Ohio to people on the radio. Thank you very much.
Well, now I'm obsessed, and you know how this is going to end up. So Cleveland proper has never hosted a U.S. Open.
So that would
now
have
I need
to
know
no good golf courses.
Now I need to know if it's ever hosted there again. Inverness has hosted a PGA. Inverness has hosted another PGA going back to the 1980s. So, yeah. Beach. I need to know where Beechwood, Ohio is. Akron, like I said, is Firestone. I don't know how close Akron is to Cleveland. Columbus Country Club, where Bobby Nichols, I think, upset Jack and Arnold Palmer in the 1964 PGA.
Akron is fairly close because that's where LeBron James is from. He's just a kid from Akron. That's south of Cleveland, which is actually kind of an in-between between Canton and Cleveland, is Akron.
But we could safely say, aside from the professional sports that are there, from what I've seen now, the land of Cleves has never hosted a major golf event.
You know what? Beechwood is your best bet, because that looks like, to me, as I'm showing you a map on the radio, it's not good radio. I would call that, what, the suburbs of Cleveland, probably?
All right.
Cleveland-ish, it's to the east, slightly.
Is it like more less than a 45 miles? Because then we could throw it into the suburb category. And I would feel comfortable doing that. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
10.3 miles. It's 25 minutes away now.
That counts.
Okay, so that's one.
That would be like, I don't know if Pumpkin Ridge, which has hosted the U.S. Women's Open, if that's considered Portland proper or a suburb. So there you go. A few years back when the U.S. Open was considered in Seattle, but the actual, like, if you, the actual mailing address was not considered Seattle. And I forgot the name of the golf course. I'm sure some lunatic out there has it figured out. Chambers Bay. When Jordan Spieth won, it's University Place, Washington, but I think it's considered a suburb of Seattle.
Now, they're not in the same zip code. Does that change anything? It's still the same distance away,
yeah,
different
but
zip codes.
There's different zip codes in major cities.
Okay.
I mean, right. New York's got a few itself.
Well, there's
10019 and 10020.
There's like at least a half dozen people in Ohio. There's certainly more than that in New York.
Well, they've got some major cities there. I mean, Toledo, Columbus, Akron, Cincinnati, Cleveland. I mean, it's smack in the middle of the country.
You didn't say Cincinnati. I'd say Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus are your big three in Ohio. And then after that, everything's kind of a city, not a big city.
Yeah, I think Columbus is like top 35 as far as market size, right around there. But anyway, before we take our first break, I want to remind you, it's ongoing. Our friends at Beer Garden hosting the 5th annual Bacon, Bluegrass, and Boneyard Beer Fest from Thursday, February 20th. That was yesterday through Sunday. And once again, they are putting on the Ritz as the food trucks out back are going bacon crazy. And they've got multiple dishes from each of the trucks and some really unique creations. And beer wise, they're adding Oregon's popular Boneyard Brewing Company, and they'll take over and have taken over the taps. And this weekend, in celebration of 5 years, they've collaborated with Boneyard, and they're releasing a brand new IPA. And each night there's going to be music and never a cover charge. And the youngins are always welcome. And tonight at 7:30, it's Better Than a Bucket. Breaker's Yard. You got to like that. Tomorrow they got the Older Street Band and Real Gone Trio, 5 and 7:30. So, two sets of music tonight, starting at 5 o'clock, and tomorrow. And then on Sunday, Corwin Bolt and the Wingnuts, starting at 4 o'clock. So it's the annual Bacon, Bluegrass, and Boneyard Beer Fest at Beer Garden in the Whitaker neighborhood. Online, beergardenme.com. All right, we'll take a break, come back, we'll have an update, have more Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
You know, they had been so spectacular together. I mean, whether you like it or not, Tom Brady does drive the ship from a competitive and a locker room perspective. When you see a guy work that hard, I played with Peyton Manning, no different there. It's not just what they do on the field. It's the leadership in the locker room that makes the other guys around them better. So the guys buy in that Bill can get that out of everyone else as opposed to Bill and Tom together.
That's Jeff tomorrow, Jeff Saturday on ESPN. Is that the modern day version of the chicken or the egg debate? Belichick or Brady? Who's most responsible for the Patriots' success? How do you think that would go in a vote? If it was just as simple as that, who do you think's more responsible for the 9 AFC titles and the 6 Super Bowl championships? Belichick or Brady?
I mean, that kind of all comes down to, like, the how you buy into sports politics, right? Do you kind of side with owners because they buy into the fandom of the team and they're, quote, fans too, and so that's what the coaches are, and the coaches are trying to win for the fans, and they come up with the schemes for the players? Or is it, no, the players are out in the field and they're the ones that execute everything and do the right thing that would make you win? Versus the other team that's doing the wrong thing at the same time. That is very tough.
You know, what I think somebody once brought up something really interesting is that every Super Bowl the Patriots have played in, you know, they haven't had a 55-10 or like what the Seahawks did to the Broncos. It's always been a grind. And you know, Brady really never took them in for the game-winning touchdown. There was the overtime touchdown. You know, Vinatieri was the guy for the first one. He had the game-winning kick. I think it was against the Panthers as well. The defense really won the game for him against the Eagles. You know, when they really had a chance to cement themselves in the two games against Giants teams that they were just superior to, you know, didn't score all that many points, so that would play in Belichick's favor. But how many playoff games did Brady just go out there and just cut people to ribbons and get clutch touchdowns and get them in the Super Bowl?
The other thing is that you've got years of experience of Belichick as an assistant, as a high-level assistant, as a coordinator, even with other teams, also winning Super Bowls with his defense. Things maybe would have even worked out in Cleveland, of all places, had they actually given him half a second, or maybe with the...
Back in Cleveland.
Yeah,
again.
The Jets or something, before he bounced down for the New England. Like, there's other evidence out very early in Belichick's career to say he was going to become a very good coach someday. You've never seen Tom Brady play without Belichick. It's not like, you know, he was an Alex Smith or something. He played a little bit here, he played a little bit there. He had his best success with Andy Reid and almost did some good things, but, you know, came up a little bit short for other reasons. Like, okay, you could see, like, maybe that's Andy Reid's scheme up playing a quarterback to a higher level because that's the kind of coach he is. He found more talent in a lesser player. With Brady, you have no outside... unless you go back to his college days, there's no outside data you can pull from to say this guy is a winner and he would do well in the NFL. He went sixth round.
What if you do the timeline and say, yeah, but Belichick had the Browns and Bernie Kosar and, you know, one playoff team in 5 years. Then they took a shot at Testaverde. And then even his first year as the Patriot coach in 2000, he had Brady, but he didn't play him until Bledsoe got hurt. So clearly he never won until, in essence, he was forced to play Brady. Like I said, there's a lot of chicken and egg here. You could make a... I'll tell you what, the one thing I'd be sure of, I would do one of those, you know, when they do like a Harris poll or an AP poll, plus minus like one percentage point. That has 51-49 somebody written all over it. Because you're always going to get somebody, oh, it's the coach. And it's like, come on, it's Brady.
Well, then the other people probably would vote. It's got to be Brady because Belichick is a defense first guy and Tom Brady plays on offense and nobody on defense has stuck around for 20 years, even as crazy as that sounds, just playing defense for 20 years in the NFL with one team.
Yeah, that sounds kind of impossible.
Right. So it's kind of got to be Brady. Like, I kind of want to side with the player there because it's the player that has to motivate the other side of the ball that the head coach generally works on. But then people talk about all the time about how knowledgeable about Belichick is about all sides of the ball because that's just how much he knows about football. So he's got to be good at something. I don't know. It is too hard to pick.
I'll tell you what. I think when push came to shove, I would probably vote for Brady. Just because I find Belichick, and it's not like I dislike Belichick, I find him condescending, and his disdain for the media has always bothered me. By the way, there was one defensive player who actually did play 20 years. Darryl Green played corner for Washington from 83 to 2002. But, you know, there's one and counting. So 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So I could go Brady or Belichick. Somebody's neither. It was Gronk. It's like you do realize he won't. I wonder, aside from Brady, who played the most years between 2001 and, say, last year with the Patriots? Is there some offensive lineman? Is it how long did Troy Brown play with them? Is it, you know, Bruschi, if you remember, played for a while, but he also ended up having that aneurysm.
So you're looking for most games played by
a Patriot between 01 and like 2019.
After Tom Brady, because he's played in almost all of them.
Yeah, Bruschi played from 96 to 2008. That's a pretty darn long time. I don't remember there being a legendary offensive lineman. Vinatieri?
No, Steven Guskowski.
No. All right, how about, by the way, somebody said no on Brady, no on Belichick, Robert Kraft.
Oh,
given the owner. If it wasn't for some recent serious creepiness. So what did you go to, the Patriots page?
I went to Pro Football Reference, and I went to players who played between 2001 and 2019. Total games played, sorted by descending games. Tom Brady, Steven Guskowski, both over 200. Then you've got Matthew Slater, who I think was another kicker? Or is he a punter?
No. Yeah.
He's a punter? Yeah. Okay, then your actual answer you're looking for is Vince Wilfork, 158 games from 2004 to 2014.
All right, so he was a guy who was, yeah, because when you think about their runners and receivers, it's always been pretty much by committee. And, you know, Troy Brown came up during the Bledsoe era, and, you know, Welker was around only for 5 years, Gronkowski for 8 years. They had... Which, by the way, is the reason you either pick the coach or the quarterback. Because really the only ones who have not only been there the whole time, that have been there most of the time.
Right behind Wilfork is an offensive tackle, Matt. He's not heavy, he's light.
Matt Light.
He's 155 games from 01 to 11. And then Devin McCourty from 2010 to 2019. I did not realize he's been there for that long. That is pretty ridiculous.
I would never have gotten that, by
the way. And Patrick Chung shows up with 141 games played from 2009
to 2019. Right, yeah. Everybody Pat Chung tonight. Good one. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Sometime in the show known as Sports Talk, Nick put together a game, quarterback carousel, quarterback musical chairs, whatever you want to call it, and he listed Brady, Bridgewater, Brissett, Very kind to put it in alphabetical order, by the way.
You have no idea how hard that was for me to do.
Through Derek Carr and Marcus and Minshew and Cam and Stafford and Tannehill and Mitch Kumstein, Trubisky and Jameis Winston, four college quarterbacks. And then you listed 15 teams, other and nowhere, and where we think their landing spot will be come, well, the next 3 months.
Yeah,
teams draft and free agents go and trades are made and all that.
We got a response from @Jeromney on Twitter, and it's a rainbow of colors, and it looks really like an abstract art painting. So maybe you don't actually have to draw a line from one quarterback to the next place. If you wanted to put the number you think he's going to go to next, or just tweet in your answers maybe with a number letter correspondence or something, because it's a fun game you can play along with. Or if you just make such a mess of your lines crossing over each other, we won't be able to track them, and you won't be able to say that you're wrong because we won't be able to actually read the chart.
All right.
It's a heady play.
That sounds deep.
Yeah.
Either way, before we move this thing along, I want to remind you, since it's a Friday, your friends at KUJZ 95.3 The Score has a great way for you to save big money. Why pay full price when you can pay half? Just go to 95.3thescore.com, click on the Sweet Deals link, and save half price on local area businesses. And this week, this morning, even more accurately at 9 a.m., we loaded up Los Patrios Mexican Restaurant, and the details are available on the Sweet Deal link at 95.3thescore.com. So check it out this week, every week, for a long, 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 long time. Awesome opportunity to save bucks and participate in a top-flight local business. Sweet Deals today from KUJZ 95.3 The Score. I obviously, as the show moves along, want to talk a little NBA as the Blazers get back to work tonight. Sans Damian Lillard. And we've got Oregon women's basketball coming up tonight. Not 100% sure what the start time is.
6 o'clock.
It's 6 o'clock. All right. Obviously, we'll have Terry Johns in the pregame at 5:30, and the call of the action on our sister station, KGN News Talk 590. And if you're looking for it on the tube, one would assume on a Friday that has Pac-12 Network written all over it. And in fact, it does. And remember, they have Sunday off because they've got the biggie. Oh, it's a biggie. Monday at Stanford on ESPN2. And as you can imagine, after the number the Ducks did on the Cardinal here, they're going to have revenge in their heart. But the problem is, I don't know if this Stanford team, regardless of attitude or commit or anything like that, is just in Oregon's league. I think we've got a pretty clear-cut big three on the national scene in the women's game right now with South Carolina and Baylor and Oregon. And Kate Scott and Mary Murphy, two of the best, will be calling the action down at Haas Pavilion. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up Crunch Time with the Tool Shed next. 95.3 The Score.
The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take 95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
Trying to win the game here. Max Smith will inbound it. Gets it to Sharif Smith in the backcourt. He's over midcourt with four. Hands it out front to Wallace with two. 25-footer for the win. Good! Panthers win. Panthers have the lead.
By the way, that Eastern Illinois was down 27 points with 11 minutes and 41 seconds to go in the game against Murray State. They finished the game on a 40-10 run and won it. They're saying by the numbers, you could make a case it's the greatest comeback in Division I hoops history. Josiah Wallace with the gamer there, 11:41 to go. They were down 50-23. They scored more points in the last quarter, basically, than they did in the first three quarters. And Murray State, man, I'll tell you, if you ever want to watch a team come completely unglued, there it is. All right, let's lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Somebody just texted me, I guess they might be, I don't know if they're listening to us or watching ESPN, and said, what's the difference between ESPN Plus, and I think it's available on the HBO app, maybe, or Showtime or something. I don't think it's exclusively on ESPN Plus. Anyway, the Wilder Fury 2 fight, and I don't know. The answer to your legit question is I have no idea how much it is. I'd imagine $40 or $60 is somewhere between $40 and $60. But anyway, it's that time on a Friday when we take a peegaloo around the world of sports, and there they are. The Cementhead Patrol, the NTB, the Not Terribly Bright Club, or sometimes just rotten people. It's called the Crunch Time Tool Shed, but first let's bring out the landlord. He's got the keys and we'll open the tool shed.
I love this city. I love being a Yankee.
It's very creaky. Let's start with a former Red Sox slugger and documented juicer, David Ortiz. He tried, mostly unsuccessfully, to put his nose so far up MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred's rear end, started to look like Manfred was growing a second Adam's apple. And this is all in the wake of the Astros scandal. He called former Houston pitcher Mike Fiers a snitch for exposing, by the way, the documented cheating that was forever taint the 2017 World Series title. Says coming out now as opposed to when it was happening is... And it's like, well, does it change the facts? Or how about this? Remember the steroids era, Davey? Remember your name on the Mitchell report, Davey? How come you didn't come forward and say, this is wrong, the numbers aren't real? And saying the commissioner is taking too much heat for calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal, handing down laughable punishments, failing to do his job protecting the integrity of the game. Hey, Poppy. Here's some advice. How about a vow of silence? And once up again, how about this one? In relation to the whole scandal, the lowlife sending death threats to Mike Fiers. For the record, the Houston fans, even some media, some broadcasters are playing the apologist card. It's kind of embarrassing. Calling out other players, other media members, telling them, you're going to have to move on, yeah, for the billionth time when Houston, like, actually apologizes, admits what they did, how they did it, then throw themselves on the mercy of the baseball court. Then, and only then, does the move forward clock begin. But a guy tells the truth, and these people threaten his life to the point where he's come out and said, look, I can handle myself. I'm afraid for my family for telling the truth. And to his credit, Fire says, look, I'm not away from this. I was part of that team. If there's suspensions, fines, I'm willing to take as much punishment as needed. And even said, if asked, he'd return the ring. That is how all of this should be handled, and then and only then can this start to be put in the rear view mirror. All right, lastly, the ESPN producers of last night's Ducks Sun Devils game. Oh. You know, we've had this discussion a billion times. There's no gray area when it comes to fans who endure Bill Walton calling games. I'm a fan. I got to admit, though, it's getting a little old. some of the stories and commentary that were once unique and charming starting to morph into a bit forced or tired or at some times a little mean-spirited aimed at his play-by-play guy. Then last night, they throw the impressionist Frank Caliendo into the mix, sitting in between Big Red and Dave Pasch. After about three back and forths, my wife didn't even say anything. She just picked her tab up and left, went to another room to read. I yelled enough about 12 times. It's like, dude, grab a chair. Get out there, do your Walton impersonation, get a laugh or two, and then get the hell out. That's the job of the producer. You know, make that slash across the neck sign for, yeah, let's end this. He was okay for a bit, and then I think it got awkward and tired. Know when enough is enough, and last night's dose of Caliendo slash Walton, enough.
Oh, that was beautiful television, though. I loved that so much because it was so fun.
So old, so fast.
At first, Bill Walton, I don't think, knew exactly what Caliendo was doing, so he kind of figured out what it was like to do a basketball game with himself. So he was learning about himself through this whole process. And then afterwards on Twitter, you know how you talk about everybody is on either, it's polarizing sides. You like Walton or you hate Walton. Everybody flipped. Everybody went from if you like one Walton, you hated two, and if you hate two Walton or hate one Walton, you love two Waltons. It was fantastic. And then Caliendo started doing his other voices too. That was fun. It was fun, man.
I've always liked him. I didn't think his Walton was that good. That's the problem. I mean, he crushes a lot of the other ones. And like I said, oh, look, Frank Caliendo. Oh, baby, have you ever been to a volcano? Yeah, ha, ha. Hey, Dave, what are you? All right, now get the hell out. We're trying to watch a basketball game, and it's hard enough with Walton. We don't need two of them. All right.
It was fun. Just have fun.
I live to have fun. If it's not funny, it ain't funny. Forced ain't funny. It was. By the way, you're the second person who I've heard say it was that most people are like, yeah, I wanted to put my fist through the TV. And I'll tell you what, and I'll guarantee you this is a factor that came into play. If Oregon was up 14, 16 points at the time and cruised to a win, oh, it's way easier to take. But they were playing like crap. He wasn't helping.
It was the first half. He left. It got close again. And then Oregon just didn't make any of their shots. Frank Caliendo being on the broadcast didn't make Oregon play
yes,
worse.
Yes, it did. He ruined everything. He totally threw a monkey wrench into the entire operation.
My only focus is to play baseball, the right way. That was silly and unprofessional.
And by the way, I'm doling out two winners, the Death Threat Idiots and David Ortiz. All right, are we done here?
Yeah, we gotta go.
Done! We'll be back with Sports Talk next, 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?